Willamette Valley, RM&E, October 14th.
No, actually, we did get three passes. There'll be one down at that door, and I'll get a couple here. And you're going to, as you come out of here, if you remember, you're going to loop back to your left, and you go to the left of the elevators in that hall. The code, you'll have to, here it is, down the bathroom door, 2 plus 4 at the same time, and then 3. And then bring one of these guys to get back in.
Okay.
Hi, Christine.
And you just
hold it. Hold it against that keypad. It takes 5 seconds, it seemed, and you'll hear the door click.
Ooh, look at this guy.
Okay. A
There's chairs over there.
We'll sit over here. I'll sit next to Stephanie. She doesn't bite.
One more over there.
At least most of the time.
Yeah, we got 3 feet.
How you doing? Good. 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 Good.
Taking care of you, Kristen. Yeah, we got space.
Just about to start, and then we can
You're
hurting me. That would have been grand.
I'm going to pass around some copies of the agenda that will also be
on the board.
I should also email to you yesterday or the last week. But we'll walk through it a little bit, and then we'll get going. Also, I'm passing around a sign-up sheet. I appreciate it if you'd identify your name and email address. So any products that come out of this workshop, we can email them to you conveniently based on that email address. Well, the purpose today is pretty grand in some ways. is to evaluate the current state of knowledge in the Willamette Valley, determine what we still need to know, and then try and figure out how we get there. So that's a fairly big agenda. We're going to try to at least take a crack at that and at least produce a pathway that will do that. And it's going to happen in several steps. If you look at the agenda, after introductions, we'll introduce each of ourselves. Rich is going to give a quick summary of the state of knowledge as he proceeds in terms of what to do, don't know, in the Willamette Valley on a project-by-project, critter-by-critter basis. That's basically here we are, where we are. And then we're going to introduce a summary of various critical uncertainties and address the question whether those are adequate, are there other questions that need to be done, just try to figure out where we need to go, what's yet to be needed to understand. And then the third part of this morning is going to be a sort of a self-survey. We're going to have a survey about our own opinions in terms of what the priorities are in the Willamette Valley. We'll try to, we have a little team of talliers ready to coalesce that information, and we'll try to present that either by the end of the morning or at worst, first thing in the afternoon. So we'll start getting a feeling for at least what this group's feelings are, the high, low, and medium priorities, and then have a discussion in terms of does that seem, make sense? Is it realistic? Are we surprised? Or is that a pretty reasonable consensus? And then I get to give a little bit of a dog and pony show after lunch. There's no better time to have a statistics discussion than after lunch.
the center stage open for you.
Yeah, I'll dance in the middle and do something. And I'm going to sort of walk through some of the types of tagging options, study options, some of the types of high priority questions that we may have. So from that point, what we have sort of identified some high-priority questions, hopefully through the survey. We've talked about some methods that may or may not be useful to try to address those. And then at the end of the day, we want to sort of integrate those two concepts, talk about a few of the high-priority discussions, and talk about, are the methods we're using to get that information adequate, or do we need to do something to make it better?
What are you looking at me for?
No, I haven't talked to you yet. I'll look at everyone. And so, and with a little luck, we'll be able to address a couple, three of those high priorities, and then I will go through and try to summarize what we've heard today and maybe try to continue that on with a technical report that I'll send back to the committee. That's sort of the highs and lows of it. So to begin with an introductions, I'm John Skelsky. I'm a professor at the University of Washington. I'm an official wildlife statistician. I've worked on the Columbia River for 25 years. The gray hairs are there to prove that. And I also am a wildlife demographer with a fair amount of experience across the country. And I'll be your facilitator and one time in the afternoon your statistician. As a statistician, I do hear confessions, but rarely give absolution. but we will have an opportunity to look at the good and bad of the different study designs. Would you like to start? We'll work on the table.
Sure. I'm Dan Spear, work for the Bonneville Power Administration. I've been leading the technical implementation of the land buyout for EPA since 2008.
Richie Graves with NOAA Fisheries. I'm basically here as a guest just to see what's going on and if I can lend any support.
Okay. I'm Bernadette Graham Hudson with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Melissa Johnson with the National Marine Fisheries Service in Portland, focusing on downstream fish passage engineering aspects in the project.
Kim Hatfield, National Marine Fisheries Service here in Portland, and I work on implementation of the buyout supporting customer staff.
Morning, Rich Piskowski, Corps of Engineers, Fishery Biologist, and I chair the Water Research Monitoring and Evaluation Team, which means I send out a lot of emails more than anything, and not focused on any particular aspect, but glad you're all here.
I'm Christine Peterson at BPA. I'm involved with both the FCRPS and Willamette Biops and Water for Research Planning.
I'm Ann Gray. I've been in and out of this water process for the Willamette since 2008. Been out more recently than in, but.
Are you in now?
All in. We're on the fence.
Just see how well
today goes.
She might take it one day at a time.
She's helping some change.
Hey, Ann, who do you work for?
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, usually.
She's on the fence.
Greg Taylor, I'm a project biologist working at the Willamette and Rogue projects.
Fenton Kahn, fish biologist with the Corps of Engineers. And before we get to the next guest here, I'm going to pitch for Carrie. She's recording and taking notes. I have the loudest voice in this room, and I'm sitting next to the recorder. So we're going to ask people to speak up so that Carrie could get all the notes.
Thank you. I'm Carrie Gibbons. I work for the Corps, and I'm a fisheries bio, and I'll be your note taker for today.
And don't forget to speak up.
Toby Cook, fishery biologist with USGS.
Russell Perry, research fishery biologist, USGS. Scott Fielding, Corps.
John Beeman, research fish biologist with USGS.
Cindy Sandermaker, Corps, Portland District.
Turtle Walker, Corps, Portland District.
Stephanie Birchfield with NIMS. I'm working on the Willamette Everything Biop implementation.
I'm Jim Ruff with the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, and I have known and worked with John Skulski for all those many years. And just so folks know, John provides biostatistical support for our Fish and Wildlife program. So anybody that ever has a wants to design a study and needs some statistics assistance, John has stepped in and done that.
Had we known they worked for you?
Yeah.
Actually, so works.
You're paying for this, right?
Bonneville. Bonneville Power pays for that support.
Oh, boy.
Dave Griffith, I'm a fish biologist with the Corps.
I'm Mike Hudson, I'm a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think I'll proceed then to the first point of our craft, and that is to figure out what the sort of state of the state is, or in our case, the state of knowledge. Richard, you're going to do a little bit of a summary of sort of overview of the two things. Managing on to just do a little bit of historical overview.
Well,
and then I'll hand off the spreadsheet.
An introduction to beginning a conversation. And as we had began talking about this workshop, we had a couple discussions with the RMNE team, and with the intent of kind of what we want to do with the workshop is take a check-in. We've been working since 2008 in this program. We started out, and there were a lot of discussions about, man, we don't know very much at all on the Willamette. And since then, the conversation tone and kind of understanding is, yeah, we do know some things. We definitely know a few things, but there is some information needs still out there. We're moving to, we have project-specific teams that have been working on Cougar, Detroit, Foster on downstream passage. Each of those teams has gathered specific information. The RMNE team has supported different studies. Right now, we need to check in, though, and see what are those critical questions in front of us to help us move towards design and implementation on each of those dams. And that's what we wanted to really see accomplished from the course perspective today. And so I prepared a table after we had a couple discussions with the RMNE team. We talked about a few questions, but the table broadens it. It lists a number of categories that we've all wrestled with. You'll see in the table, we've used them to document through our EDR process a range of issues that we think are important to consider. Some of those information needs, I think we would agree, we've got quite a bit of information on. Several, there's probably still a different perspective on how much do we need. So I guess, John, that's about all I wanted to kick off by saying.
If you want, you can bring that sheet up.
You guys share that.
Where's the light?
Yeah,
you guys are going to get wrong the one you just
said.
There you go.
There's one chair over here.
Yeah, I know.
There is a lumber chair back there. Yeah.
You guys don't have chairs?
I'll go see if I can find
chairs. They need chairs.
Level 2, but it's a chair.
Here,
scoot these down.
Okay.
There is one more.
Chair over here. Okay.
And then Rich wants to get some more chairs.
Come on, you guys, let's get creative and find a way to make this room more.
There's a seat right here.
Hey, Carrie, if you go through this, if there's
anything. Does everyone have my phone or a green sheet for lack of a better phrase for it?
I know you're not.
That was sent out electronically ahead of time.
You don't want like arm.
I'm the kind of person that.
Evaluation. Okay.
Unless I have a tangible copy, it really doesn't mean anything to me. But I can hand out hard copies to everyone that we can discuss. And I think there's two aspects to this that need to be discussed. We should probably do sequentially. One is the issue of and under the first column, the information categories, are those the critical needs, critical questions that we need to address? And the issue is, are there some that are missing? Or are there some that we really don't care about or maybe superfluous? And then the second issue, after we address the first column, is, are the green spaces, which are supposed to represent areas of adequate information versus the white spaces of inadequate information, what we believe? In other words, and this is based on the Army Corps perspective, not anyone else's. So the first thing I think is to do is to try to address the issue is of the information categories. Is that capturing sort of the critical questions that we need to address at one or more of the locations here in the Willamette Valley. I guess we could go down the list one by one and sort of get a yay or nay or ah or some sort of painful sound if it's on that. But maybe let's try that, and then we'll go back and talk about the issues on a location by location basis, if you don't mind. So, everything I've read, reservoir entry time has been, or was, or could be an important consideration. Do you have any problem with that being on the list of critical uncertainties, either past, present, or future?
Yes, we can all agree on one thing.
Yes.
Move on.
All right.
Like, no, I'm not agreeing.
I agree.
I mean, John, interruption.
No, go ahead.
So some of us have been debating some of these for years, and I it'd be great if we could all reach agreement on everything here in 6 hours, but let's not belabor it if we can't. And I talked to Rich about this, that I don't know that we're going to have the time to go into detail about exactly what we still need to know in each of the different basins. Mm-hmm. And I would, if we get bogged down in that, I ask that maybe we take a step back and kind of say, okay, what are the critical study needs that we really want to talk about, and how's the best way to design those study needs given
the limitations? I think this is sort of the first step of it. If we figure out what we think we know, then what's not known might be the first step of figuring out where we have to go. And I also think, as you do, is I don't think we necessarily need to have consensus on each one of these lines as much as there's a preponderance of people say, hey, this seems to be important to someone, some group. And then we can worry about how much later.
Okay.
But what we don't want is to have categories that are missing.
No, I agree.
Or have some categories that everyone says, hey, this isn't really important at all, and we can scratch that off. And I think if we can do that, make sure that everything we want on the list is on the list, and everything that really needs to be on the list is scratched off the list, we've made at least that much more forward.
Yeah.
I think it's a good point. We're not looking for a consensus. That's too much to hope for. But if we can just sort of get a feeling for sort of thumbs ups or downs in terms of, for some of us it seems to be still an important issue or was an issue, do that. All right, but then the next one is the abundance of the fish entering the reservoir. What's our stock? It has been, is, could be, and it really argues with the fact that you need to know what you're working with to be able to figure out what happens to them. Okay, we'll go on to that. Two down, 73 to go. Once you got the fish in the reservoir and you know when they're there, the next obvious question sometimes is, well, how well do they survive? And here in the Willamette, you have multiple age classes. So you got big fish, little fish. And so in terms of the smaller fish, is it pretty well, is that still an issue in terms of what their survival rates are in the reservoirs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Passage?
For the fry.
Yeah.
Yes. You can't tag them.
Yeah. So what you don't know, I would think, would be still a critical uncertainty.
Yes, in terms
of the larger fish.
We've gone on both sides of this in terms of, do you really have to have a number for that? If you're actually, how many fish are coming into the head of the reservoir, if you're getting evidence that reservoir mortality isn't great, you're getting lots of fish in the forebay telling you that, they can make it through, or you've got some JSAT studies that are showing that those are bigger fish. You may not need to know that number in order to design a fish passage facility. When we first started with the Comprehensive Harmony Plan, we didn't want to, if we got information that said that reservoir mortality was a big problem, and that we thought we had lots of predators, or we had evidence that there was lots of reservoir mortality, then we would want to focus more on looking at a head of reservoir collector. So that's when it is an issue, but in some reservoirs, like at Cougar, we don't think that the reservoir is killing a ton of the fish, so do we really need to get an actual number on that to make decisions?
I agree. I wanted to show that to you.
So qualitative is sufficient for this
category? Yeah, in some cases.
In some cases, yeah.
Yeah, well, lookout might be the
the one case where we have considered that may be important because we're still wrestling with, as the RPA had asked the Corps to do, look at Hedda Reservoir or at Dam Passage because of the potential for high predation or low survival, in other words, Turbo Cat Point Long Reservoir, a lot of predatory species.
What about Detroit?
Well, I would kind of put that in, I don't know, because we're seeing pedigree results indicating the population has replaced itself, or at least early indication of that. So there may be enough fish passing through it.
And the other thing, I mean, not just the Hedda Reservoir, but also there could be operations that could address reservoir mortality, like in Fall Creek type drawdowns.
But you'd still need to know what the survival, the base survival is, to do some sort of a management action so that you can have a pre and a post evaluation to know that you've done a benefit.
If it's, is it a predation study then? I mean, you can do a pre and post study on predators and then infer that by reducing the number of predators, you're reducing reservoir mortality.
Should we maybe flag this one to discuss further when we get into the second half of May?
Well, I guess part of this is, is it important? But then what I'm hearing is, how qualitative or quantitative is the information?
Right. So I think we need to discuss lookout in more detail with this.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like this in terms of a category that we don't want to scratch it off the list of. Of things to consider. You might want to get back to which places and how much and how well, but we don't want to
throw it off. Do we want to discuss the individual projects? Do we feel like we have sufficient information at Lookout? I'd say no. I think Cougar, we're good.
Yeah, John, maybe again for context, as I understood, as you and I worked on the agenda, the intent was have a discussion here so people can get some common understanding about what each are thinking in terms of how much information do we have in these categories by project, but really we want to wrap that discussion up by doing a individual survey of everybody. So we don't have to have agreement. We're going to ask each party, what do you think? Those that aren't familiar, Richie, I know we've included in the survey a column for I don't know, but most everybody at the table has been working in the Willamette. So we're wanting to just get an overall discussion here to just spark people's memory about what do we know, what do we don't know.
Exactly. And we will, like I said, we will have another survey that sort of mimics this page that will be asking people to say whether they think these issues for a particular site are critical or not. So we can set a prioritization, at least for the people in here. But again, I think it would be useful to know roughly whether the categories are important. So it sounds like survival of small is well defined, poorly defined, qualitative, quantitative is still going to be important because we don't know what's going on, sort of unknown yet. Survival of larger fish is marked down green as having a fair amount of adequacy already understood. And there have been, most of the tagging studies to date have been local larger fish because of the tagging limitations. I'm assuming that because he did it, it must have been important.
I don't think we've done a study at Lookout. And I think we have that info for Fall Creek.
Yeah. Reservoir survival for large fish.
Yeah. Fall Creek,
we
do.
We haven't done anything.
I mean, and John, it wasn't, the studies were not really designed to look at reservoir. I mean, the USGS correctly, but I mean, they really. We were really trying to get behavior of these active tag fish and when they get to the Fore Bay and how they behave in the different operations in the Fore Bay. I mean, it's great that we were able to come up with some estimates of reservoir survival through that, but...
Yeah, it was more the probability of a fish released at the head of the reservoir reaching the dam at least once.
Right.
I marked it green. And obviously, my opinion here, there, because it gave us enough information, as you were kind of speaking to, Stephanie, it gives us a sense that fish of that size are able to reach the dam multiple times. They're able to if there was adequate passage, they're more than likely to survive the reservoir to pass. Right now, that may not be the case at each dam, or it's not.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I just think in terms of, it's not like it's a real hard and fast point estimate that people would be using.
So I have a question, not to take us back, but when you say a critical question, is there some time component to that? Is it critical to answer before we implement a passage operation or structure? Or is it critical to know in the long term to see what, you know, how the population is doing and what further improvements can be made? Because some of these are, I think, critical to know in the long term, but may not be critical to know prior to taking an action.
That's a good point, and for the core, I was thinking of it on the short term, but if we want to indicate, you know, when you're speaking to one of those categories, that'd be good to note. Are you thinking of, yeah, we're going to need this in the long term, but it's not important for the short term. Let's call that out. That'd be great. But I think the focus here for me in the core is what do we need in the short term to design and implement.
Let's move to the next two categories. Let's try to do it at the same time. Forebay entry time, whether a small fish, big fish. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's for purposes of potentially like fluid service collector and drawdown times and the like. Is that critical to know? It looks like there's a fair amount of information for the, in this case, the smaller fish and less for the larger ones.
My guess is there's probably interactions with operations and how important operations are for the overall passage question, but that's...
Yeah, further down we have a question on effects of operations on passage timing.
Right, okay.
So right now we're having fish entering, we know the entry time of the fish into the reservoir, we know supposedly something about the abundance, something about the survival if you look down the categories. Now they've gotten to the forebay.
So I got a question. If you had telemetry studies that were showing reservoir survival rates to the forebay, how is it that you don't also have timing to the forebay for same greater than 90 millimeter fish?
Like I would have flip-flopped those green blocks. Mm-hmm. Seems like we have more information on the bigger, larger fish than we do on the little fish.
Maybe you were talking about wild fish before the greater than
60 millimeter. So, entrance timing for a greater than 60 millimeter fish is just, and they grow big enough.
Right, from
they are already there.
From a timing. The way I had laid this out was with Fred's work. There's Fred.
Where is Fred?
We had information on near shore timing, and mostly that's the fry group. They're hugging the shoreline, and we have an understanding under baseline conditions when they arrive in the forebay. Operations affects that timing, and that's another thing we continue for planning to study again this year with Lookout. But then those fish are moving offshore roughly in June, and we don't have a lot of information on that 60 to 90. We can't use a radio or JSATS tag. So that's why I had it indicated as not green for the greater than 60, but greater than 90, we have timing and behavior.
So you could add a row to say for the entry greater than 90.
We have
then
all
you get all the telemetry data there.
But remember, those are fish that we release at specific times,
right.
So it doesn't really tell us the natural.
It doesn't.
No, right.
Okay.
There should be one. But we do see, even if fish are present, because, I mean, for me, okay, we all know that the little guys are there and they're growing, so they're eventually going to get to 60 millimeters, right? So for this entry timing for greater than 60 millimeter fish, it's more kind of whether or not they're able or present is one thing, but are they, we see, at least in what we've seen with the operation of the PFFC, and other projects, high head projects with Chinook, is kind of the passage rates kind of varied throughout the year seasonally. And you had this lull in July and August into early September where you don't see even if they have a surface route available, you don't see higher passage rates then. I mean, we know they're in the reservoir somewhere, but are they in the forebay at a depth where you can pass them?
One day. And then the next day they're somewhere. I mean, if they're moving around.
So like, I think
like
it's
John's fish, you know. I mean
it, a lot of these metrics we're kind of listing out, and it's a linear kind of train of thought, which I think's somewhat from the Columbia, where you have like a conveyor belt of fish coming down, entering one reservoir, passing that dam, entering the next reservoir. Where here, it's totally different, the interaction of the fish with the project, where they're living in the reservoir for a period of time. Available to pass at a very small age, but some are residing, and then you have this period of time where fish really don't pass for whatever reason.
So what are you suggesting that we try to define? I mean, I thought that the purpose of having this entry time, forebay entry timing, was to help define if you were to have a structure or some type of facility or spill or something at the dam, when would you be operating it? And maybe, you know, with that information, okay, maybe you would have to shut it, or you could shut it down in the summer and it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen at most of the projects, you'd need to have it operating in the spring, because we know that, and that was how we got this question was, well, if they're getting in Cougar, they don't get to the head of the reservoir until April, May, so you don't, you know, they're not going to get into the forebay until later, although I guess they are there, but, you know, it's kind of like, so if they don't actually get to the forebay until May, maybe we don't need a facility that operates in March.
Yeah.
Which makes a difference in terms of cost.
Sure.
But that, I mean, I think that was the rationale. And so, all right, so if they're in there in the springtime and they're not doing anything in the summer and then they start moving again in the fall, you need something that can operate during those elevations. I don't know how you put that in here. That was the rationale for this kind of
for this metric, yeah. So if it's when you're going to operate a facility, I think we have some info on that for Cougar. I think Fall Creek's a little unique. I think Foster, we have information on fish presence and passage rates. Lookout in Detroit, I'm not so sure.
For the larger fish?
Yeah. I think it's just speaking in more general terms about when you would operate a facility based on fish presence and availability.
So real quick, I'm really going back to what Bernadette said and what are the critical questions for implementation or for actually designing this. Because, I mean, we're getting bogged down on these details of forebay entry and, you know, fish living in the reservoir and... I mean, if you put a surface collector, you know, that has pumps on one of these projects, it's going to change the hydraulics and everything that we investigated up to the point where we actually implemented fish passage could totally change. And so, I mean, I think what's important to remember, and I know this might be getting a little bit outside of the box, but the thing is to be able to provide the flexibility to change that timing of passage, to be able to adjust to different operations, whatever the case may be. But I mean, it seems like a lot of these things that you look at have the potential to change after there is fish passage provided, or are not necessary to know absolutely prior to designing fish passage.
But at some point, to operate efficiently, you would want to know it.
Yeah.
So is that so much an esoteric question in terms of it'd be nice to know what fish are where they are as much as we need to know where they are so we can operate fish bypass systems optimally? Is that?
Yeah, and I think beforehand, I mean, understanding when they come into the reservoir, perhaps when they come into the forebay and where they're at in the forebay are the three main questions that need to be answered in order to put some structure in there. And then... that whatever structure that is, you know, has the flexibility to change based on what you're seeing in your follow-up evaluation of that passage.
And after you put it in, just like the PFFC, there's going to be things that come out of the woodwork, and you're going to say, hey, there's a real strong seasonal component here. so maybe we should only operate it here to here. I don't know if we're going to be able to, I think we'll have some sense of what that is, but I think with a permanent facility, a larger scale facility, that could even change a little bit. So,
well, it strikes
it'll,
me.
It'll be kind of defined and adaptively managed after the fact, really. I mean, we'll just keep tweaking it to make it work and work with whoever to make sure that people are satisfied with it.
But it strikes me that the survival for the different groups is really absolutely critical path to what kind of a structure and where you put it. I mean, if 95% of your fish are dying in the reservoir and have no shot at ever getting into a forebay, where you have a zone of influence where some structure could potentially draw fish in, you really don't have a chance of being very successful. As opposed to, you know, if you've got 50% or 60% of the sub-yearlings, small fish, you know, making it down to that area, then you probably got a pretty good shot. I mean, estimates I've seen, for example, for like Hanford Reach fall schnook is that, you know, from the time they're fried to the time they get to McNeary Dam, you're losing about two-thirds of that whole population. But, you know, there's gobs of them, so you still have a lot left to work with. So, you know, to me, the categorical kind of, you know, high, medium, low survival is probably good enough for that life stage. But you got to know that they're getting down to the forebay, mm-hmm. or you could, or anything you put in there just won't have anything to work with.
So the question is, not only are they getting to the forebay, but when and where in the forebay?
Well, I think I'm agreeing with Mike a little bit that that's like the second tier down, which is really fine tuning. You know, details about structure or operation timing or, you know, this, that, and the other. But the critical question is, are the fish even getting there to work? And if they are, then you're almost forced to go to some kind of a head of reservoir.
In our case, it does become an important design question, because when you have peaks in abundance and availability of fish to pass, mm-hmm. we have these reservoir fluctuations. We need to make sure that we have our system set up to perform best at those peak times. Mm-hmm. And at least based off of info from Cougar, it looks like it's probably gonna line up to be some of the most challenging times where we have the greatest range of reservoir elevations is when we see the peaks in fish availability, at least for Cougar.
Yeah. I largely agree with what Mike has pointed out here. That some of this is, we can deal with coarse or high, low, medium categorization of timing, but as you're pointing out, Griff, it becomes a design issue for us, especially when we're talking about a trap and haul, and our engineers can speak to this better, but the ideal for us would be if we understood timing and abundance, we would be able to design the facility and size it correctly. We may have to be on the adaptable end because we won't be able to get at those metrics perfectly in some of these reservoirs. Small fish are going to be hard to study the timing and abundance in the forebay, like you talked, Griffith's dynamic. But to the extent that we can resolve abundance and timing in the forebay for these smaller fish helps us in the design process. And we can build it more economically that way.
Seems that as a facilitator, we've discussed this enough to say that those questions should stay on the list. I mean, it was part of the whole purpose in the first place, you know, should they remain on? So we'll assume so. And then you get to the next one, a forebay abundance. In part, that it seems to me, if you know what enters the reservoir, you know the survival through the reservoir, theoretically, at some point you know what the abundance in the forebay is. Not when, but you eventually you'd know that. But more importantly to some of your questions is, all right, we got them in the forebay, now where are they, what are they doing? So you know where to put plucking facilities. So the issues of the horizontal vertical distribution, the movement patterns, are seems to me the next parcel to, all right, you got them to the forebay, we want to do something, now how do we collect them? We need to know how they behave, and where they are to make that efficient. Is that reasonable assessment? And is that, and it seems to me, is that important?
It is important, but we've got existing operations. You know, if you change the operation, it would alter your vertical and horizontal distribution, mm-hmm. just like at Fall Creek. I mean, they're zipping through there now, but these other projects have a large reservoir. and a, you know, a stagnant forebay. But yes, it's important information to know.
So I don't hear anyone arguing about keeping categories with regard to horizontal vertical distribution movements.
Yeah, no, I guess I'd just add, we probably have a pretty good understanding under existing conditions. I think, as you're saying, Jim, some of these projects, like Lookout, maybe it's the top one on the list to consider alternative operations, we may need more.
All right, I'm going to move on. The next one is survival through the existing dam routes. I'm assuming that's through the dam and through the route-specific survivals. Is that important to know for overall?
Well, it was important, but we've got it now, and we are, I think, able to say whether we need to make that improvement or not.
Don't we have survival through FOSTRA?
Yeah. Did we have it? And I know we're getting more of that.
For Chinook.
For Chinook.
For Steelhead.
So again, let's be very explicit in our metrics here. So are we talking concrete survival or, you know, dam passage survival?
I think we're talking concrete through each route. RO, spillway, turbine.
So excluding dam passage efficiency, just the,
yes,
the concrete
just survival. Is what this one's about.
So yes, then we have that for FOSTRA.
That's what I was going to say. Is this for the 90 millimeter or bigger fish category again?
That's
the unspoken understanding.
Well, our balloon, tag, and sensor fish work was more than that size class. When you guys know,
they were greater than 90.
They were,
with the exception of green pewter.
They were larger fish.
Yeah. Okay.
But we have some more sort of qualitative info from screw tracking for smaller fish, but it's much more qualitative.
But do we need less than 90?
I think
I don't know if we do.
I think for the existing routes, so it's two things. One, you need to understand the concrete survival, but you also need to understand sort of the passage efficiency of these routes, right? So if they're unscreened and they're operating, what portion of the run is going to go through? And that gives you an idea of how it'll affect overall project survival as you go forward in addressing downstream passage, right? So, a great example is Cougar, where right now where we're at in the design is we have a facility that operates down to the existing temperature weir slots, and then once the pool drops below that, we're passing fish through existing routes. So again, it goes back to, you know, how does that line up with how fish are arriving at the forebay and peaks in abundance and availability to pass, and how efficient are these routes at emptying out the forebay when we have these unscreened routes operating. So the other alternative at Cougar is a screen structure that operates through the entire range. So 100% of the flow up to a certain flow range would be screened, right? So obviously that system is much more expensive, but lowers the risk for having fish go through routes of lower survival. That makes sense.
And lets fish go out whenever they want instead of waiting until you get to the level that's more.
So I think
your point was we may be using existing routes for some of the year to get fish out, and so it is important to know, mm-hmm, if we want to use those, what kind of survival we have.
Yeah.
Like we got that at the RO at Cougar, and you know, if that is part of a long-term solution, we've said, you need to improve survival for that.
Yeah. And understanding benefit. I mean, if the existing routes are great, we're not going to buy much. If they're not,
right,
we're going to buy a lot more.
So may I ask a question? If dam passage survival is very high, say 98%, do you really care what route they're going through?
No, because we don't care if it's that high.
You know, that's why
you're saying dam passage survival, which includes dam passage efficiency, you know. But if you're saying concrete survival is 98%, but you're only getting 5% of them out, then yeah, you got a problem.
But, you know, obviously, that passes by all the same 50%, you'd want to know where and why you're seeing those kind of numbers. Then you definitely want to be able to break it up into pieces and figure out where the good routes and bad routes are, so that you focus on mitigation. So the point being, sometimes
we're closer.
When we sort of tackle a problem, we first ask, you know, is the patient sick?
Yeah, well, we studied that. And then
if it is, we will try to figure out where the top element is. You know?
I think
the patient is sick.
Patient's sick.
The patient is sick if your number is 50.
Partly from Griff, I missed a category. I mean, if we call this one that's on there survival through existing routes, that's concrete survival. We're missing passive efficiency by route.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I think for Lookout, you know, we might be able to. I don't think it's critical that we go and get concrete survival at this point for Lookout. I think we got questions further upstream for Dan. At this point. So I think a qualitative guess based off of other projects.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've talked there with the Armony team, and we started with our comprehensive plan. Stephanie mentioned about just the strategy for Lookout being, we're not sure if we get enough fish through the reservoir, so why invest in studies specifically looking at the dam concrete survival and others, questions at the dam. And I think that's where we still are. That's where the core is, wanting to better understand reservoir survival. Then that would lead us to, do we focus more at Lookout or at a reservoir?
Well, let's move on to the next two. I think we're going to handle the next two categories again, somewhat concurrently. The hydraulic setting and debris load, all, I'm assuming, for the purposes of how that affects fish passage. Critical questions?
The first is setting, without a doubt. I think both of them are, but we should probably discuss the hydraulic setting, and I think understanding that is, especially for the high head projects, is key. Maybe not so much for Fall Creek, maybe not so much for Lookout until we answer some of those other questions, but I think we still have work to do at Cougar in understanding how the fish behavior and the hydraulics interact.
I tell you, there was about 500 juvenile Chinook sitting at the back of the PFFC yesterday, or last week.
The back? What do you mean? Behind
the back. The outflow. Eating every little food item that came through. We had four in a trap.
So, cool.
Yeah, it is important.
So just aim that flow. Yeah.
They liked the flow, but it was the wrong flow.
It was the wrong flow.
Well, I'll take that as a yes, then we'll move on.
Yeah.
I'm going to tackle the next two categories, effects of operations on passage timing and passage success.
That getting at your dam passage efficiency, then?
I'm assuming it's associated with passage survival, the passage efficiency at the dams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what would make these green? I think we have a lot of info on this already. I don't know.
I didn't try and guess. I mean, it's a complicated one. It depends on what you envision the solution to be. If we're doing a surface collector at Cougar, let's say, if you talk through the operations there, we understand how fish are responding as we fill the reservoir in the spring and maintain an elevation, high elevation through the summer. We've been studying at Cougar the response behavior of fish to different discharge levels. But then if you take, let's switch to Lookout. We've been talking about doing major operational changes, reservoir drafting or delaying refill or not refilling. It just depends on the scale of the problem or the solution you're envisioning.
We do have some spill.
And we're collecting data for Foster on operations.
And if you think of a place like Detroit, you know, we're going to power peak there. Well, it's likely to have a pretty big influence, potentially, on
I think
what
for
we're doing.
Cougar Detroit, those things for the bigger fish are nailed in pretty good.
And then we'll have that same data for Foster here this year.
I think, like a lot of these categories, it depends on the size of the fish. The whole tagging technology thing.
I think, what about Fall Creek? Are we green on Fall Creek? I mean, we have a pretty good understanding of how the current passive operation passes fish. But
that's, I mean, that is the question. It's like, yeah, we have good information on that operation, but we don't know what would happen if you held the reservoir low through the whole spring and summer. How would that affect fish passage? And, you know, same thing at Detroit. We have some information about when you're spilling, what happens with fish, but we don't know what would happen if you modified reservoir refill there. And I'm not saying you have to do that, but those, you know, I think that we've been assuming that if you can build something that works within the current operational structure, that would be the least impactful on all the other resources that the Corps and Bonneville has to manage. And so we were willing to go that way if we could find, you know, get fish past the dam without lots of mortality and through the reservoir.
So I seem to be hearing that these are important to know for the current operation, but that's not adequate. You want to have sort of an understanding over breadth so you know what you can ratchet up or ratchet down to optimize conditions.
I think the way that we were looking at it was that if you can get good fish passage using the current operations that work the best for power, recreation, other resources, then we're good with it. You don't need to know how well fish will move, you know, when there's no reservoir there, if you already have good fish survival passage. But if for some reason you can't get fish passage under those existing operations, then you start looking at these other things. And the only reason we're doing the drawdown of Fall Creek is because there's no hydro there, so it's easier to do that operation. It'd be harder to do it at Detroit.
It seems like some of that comes after, you know, knowing what your flexibility would be with operations in combination with whatever structure is built would come after. I mean, if we have a good handle on how fish are behaving now, and that's what we're designing to the current operations, that seems adequate for now. But in the future, if we don't get the response we expect, there may need to be additional operations that are implemented in combination with that structure to get fish to move towards the Fore Bay or whatever.
Like the peaking at Detroit kind of thing. That might be modified after you put structure.
My concern with identifying this as a critical uncertainty is the number of permutations across all of these projects that you could have in operations. I mean, you could study this for years and years. And so I this one, I mean, I think when the opportunity presents itself, it's good to get information on it, but it isn't something that should define the time frame by which the fish, downstream fish passage solution is implemented.
But what I'm hearing though is sort of a two-stage process. If the current operations work, we don't have to look beyond the horizon. On the other hand, if they're not satisfactory, whether that's defined as, then you may have to look at alternative conditions to see whether you can improve passage. So it's a two-stage process. So yes, no, go or no go, kind of.
Yeah, you've got a choice. You can go to the head of the reservoir, or you can change operations, try to get them through the reservoir. And that's
so I think we're green on Cougar, if we want to keep filling in squares for both of these. I don't know if anyone would agree with me.
But I will take it that those are important. Mm-hmm. We stay on the list.
Yeah.
Well, all right. And it may be worth a little bit more, just to clarify, and Craig started down that road. If we look at Lookout, again, we are looking at operations. So, and I think the Armini team supports that. So that's one we need. We don't have an understanding of that. Cougar,
right.
We do have a fair understanding. We're pursuing improvements that are surface collection related under existing ops, so there's probably not more needed. Foster, additional work being done to look at spillway operational effects, and that's on the docket for this
this fiscal year's.
Yeah, we're collecting
studies.
The data right now, so we'll have that data on operations.
Is Morgan meeting it after this year? That's
there
depends
on
results.
Don't be presumptive and fill it in.
No.
I filled it in.
Yeah.
You're studying at work, Fenn.
You're calling it good after this year?
No.
Fenn's money in the bank.
Money in the bank.
Detroit's. Well, we talked about power peaking may have effects that we don't yet understand. The solution, kind of the conceptual concept here, is a surface collection under existing operations. But that power peak may have effects that we might want to understand before designing. I'll leave that to the group to decide, but that's kind of the situation there. Fall Creek is an existing operation, and although we could look additionally at other operations, we're moving forward with plans to maintain what we've been doing at this point, at least the Corps perspective. I haven't heard Stephanie or Nim say, well, we need to really look at some other operations, but do you want
to? We've been asking to do survival studies through the reservoir, get a better idea of how many fish are coming into the reservoir and how many come out when you do open it.
But not a change in operations investigation?
No, we just want to know what kind of overall survival we're getting with the existing operations. If it's good, we don't need to try anything else. If it's not so good, maybe we need to try something different. But we don't have that first piece of information.
Okay.
It would be nice to have.
Well, let's move on to the next category. Contribution of different life histories to adult Chinook recruitment. I'm not quite sure where can or should be adding steelhead.
Yeah, we should have steelhead in there, right?
We have
steelhead.
No.
Steelhead.
Really
are
to be critical to me to designing and implementing a fish
message. Does this include residual
life? I would assume so. That's part of form of life.
Just really,
yes, really.
Really.
Right, this is what we're trying to address, though, through the passage system in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think this is kind of, although we think it's an interesting thing to know, we, in terms of designing and putting in downstream passage, if you design something to pass all life stages, the fish will move when they want to move, and you'll maintain the diversity of those.
As long as you can do that, I think the important thing is to maintain the different life histories
right.
in the Willamette, because in the Columbia, we haven't done a very good job of that. And here in the Willamette, mm-hmm. we have all these different life histories that ODFW has told us about. And the ISAB continually says, maintaining species diversity and life history diversity is really important.
Okay.
So whatever we design, it has to pass all these life histories and consider all those, I think.
Well, I do too, I just don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree, but there is obviously some life histories more successful than others. And if we take maybe the lookout example where we're debating, should we pass fish from the head of reservoir or allow them to rear passing through the reservoir, grow,
point.
Move
that
out? When you look at that problem, you're going to be passing mostly fry downstream into a degraded system.
That's exactly what I was thinking when we were talking about the operational alternatives.
The worst case is then you don't have a lot of recruitment if you don't have enough survival from the fry that you pass around the project.
You may be selecting or favoring certain life histories then.
And the reservoirs may be doing that as well.
Oh yeah, we've created the
life. Yeah, yeah, but I guess should there be consideration of balancing adult recruitment with diversity? I mean, when you look at the conservation literature, you look at the recovery plan criteria, abundance is more important than diversity. They value both, but
it's part of VSP.
You need the diversity to get the recovery in the same.
Yeah.
You need. I'm saying
you need
both,
both,
but if you don't get enough adult returns, and these projects will select, as you just said, reservoirs do select for a certain life history. We're seeing examples, and I mean it's anecdotal still, not hanging my hat on it, but Fall Creek suggests that you go out large from these reservoirs, you see pretty good recruitment. You go out young as a young fry, we don't know what you get.
literature suggests if you end up in the estuary as a young fry, your survival trajectory is lower.
Right.
So I'm hearing two different stories. One is we want to maintain diversity because that seems like a good thing. We keep our own cards on the table. The other one is to find out which age classes may be the strongest contributors to returns to make sure that we're doing the mitigations to benefit those age classes. So one is just keep it diverse and hope that things go well. Another one is we better figure out which age classes are contributing the most and make sure that our mitigations are focusing on that. Those are slightly different approaches. Which are we?
So how do you measure success at how you're maintaining diversity if you don't know what it is, and do we have adequate information on that? I think that's the question before.
I think we do have pretty good information on the diversity of life history stages and undammed portions of the system. And
again, I think this is something that you look at on the back end. Mm-hmm. Right? That's where your measure of success, because you have the ability for all the different life histories to stay in the reservoir or leave at the time they want, and you can do a study to evaluate that if it is indeed important.
But what do you compare it to if you're looking at it on the back end? Right? So
I think that may end up working out. Sure, if we have a surface collector at Cougar and Detroit, we could adaptively manage those after they're in place to ensure you're getting passage of a variety of timing and size arriving.
Maybe.
But the lookout problem, for the core, it's an important aspect because we wouldn't want to invest without some sense that passing a whole lot of fry downstream is going to result in a self-sustaining population.
And I agree with you on that. I think that the only thing you'd need to do this beforehand is if we're seriously thinking of doing a hetero collector.
Yeah.
And we have talked about let's design a study to go ahead and collect a bunch of those fry and pass them downstream and get some of that information about are they contributing as well as. I mean, we have the paired release study that kind of gets at that, except, they're not really the wild fit. It's really not the same.
So we don't know when they need the reservoir precisely.
But, if you could go in there and actually collect enough of the real, they're wild fish, but they're F1s, collect them, pass them downstream, find a way to monitor when they come back, you could, kind of answer one of the big questions that Rich is asking. Is this more harmful than good? That question, we're not sure of it.
But before you're at the cliff of that question, you need to answer to get through the reservoir.
Yeah.
I know. Well, that's why we've kind of punted on that for now, because I think we
if we
do it at the dam.
If we do wait and then say, reservoir survival is poor, we're that many more seasons down the road. A lot of times we're trying to address questions in tandem.
That's true.
And it's going to be project specific.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think that was probably the intent of the measures in the biological opinion that said that there was going to be this head of reservoir prototype. It really hasn't been seen. So, we've missed a few years of studying as well.
So another row that may be missing that goes along with this is what is the availability and quality of downstream habitat, mainstem habitat, and floodplain connectivity, and backwater sloughs, and all that. If you're going to pass fry downstream, they have to have a place to rear.
But you could also say upstream rearing, too. I mean, not all the fish are going to be coming down as fry. Some will rear in the troughs where they're fishing.
And in some
places, the reservoir that they have to pass into might be really dangerous. So, lookout's a good example of that, I know.
I think to build on Jim's point and not speak for him at all, I think the question is, do you want to try really hard to pass fry if it seems like there's not a good chance of them surviving because the habitat that they once relied on is no longer there or is not there in a meaningful way or reasonable.
But we can't also forget about that life history strategy where they disperse intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
to spread their risk throughout the basin.
Do you operate for the system you'd like to have or for the system that you do have? I think ideally, it would be a huge change, but I think you'd have to do quite a bit of work to get anything like the floodplain that is, I understand that those fry ones relied upon. So in the absence of that, is it a great idea to...
But again, that's project specific.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, sure.
Well, I think that can go back to the protocol. I mean, you think, look around what other people are doing in the Pacific Northwest. They're taking fry and dumping them back in reservoirs. Well, we may not choose that strategy here. Even though we have information that might suggest the big fish are going to do better, we may take the fry that we collect in whatever system we have and pass them, knowing that that's going to be a small fraction. And they won't probably do as well as the bigger fish that we'll get later. But we can tweak that. Or if we get information and we just want to optimize survival and forget about life history, we could dump a bag in.
Is, you know, is knowing that important for design? Absolutely. So are you gonna put in a bunch of separator bars like they have at Pelton Round Butte and handle these fish five different times to sort out each size and put this in this pot and that in that pot?
I feel like we're going to have to make accommodations to catch this and that, no matter what we put in.
Yeah.
The BFFC caught 39 millimeter Chinook, and it caught an adult the other day.
Yeah, you have the luxury of a pipe, and you have the luxury of a volitional system, which we haven't quite worked out yet.
Pass them.
But depending upon the situation, the reef survival between, you know, below Detroit Dam there in Tominto is pretty bad. So I don't know if you'd choose that there, right? Even if you could do a volitional system. Even though it's out of your concrete, they're not surviving very well. So it's complicated.
Well, what struck me about this question as somebody who's not at all close to the nitty-gritty of what you're doing is, are you trying to define what you think it ought to look like after you have a successful structure? Or are you trying to assess kind of the baseline? The question's ambiguous to me, which asset you're trying to look at.
The baseline's currently is influenced by the dam space.
Exactly. But do you know what you're getting now? It sounds like sometimes yes, sometimes no, sometimes it's qualitative.
We know what's getting passed through the dams now. It's mainly the larger fish that can get out when the reservoir's at a low level. And I think that the intention of having this here was, like Griff was kind of getting at, would it, and Enrich, does it inform what kind of structure you would build and where you would build it? But it's really hard to study because your baseline is not what we might think the ideal, you know, natural system would want.
I'm still confused. Are we interested in monitoring to make sure we have life history diversity, or are we trying to figure out, given that we do have life history diversity, what are the relative contributions of the different age classes to the returns?
Yes.
You don't think you need to do that. You don't think you need to do that because you're not measuring what, you know.
For design of facilities, I tend to agree with the group. It's less important if we're doing surface collection. If we're putting a structure in, we can operate it for diversity later. There, Griff pointed out there are some aspects that would be ideal to know that under. The most important one to me is lookout to make a decision on head of reservoir versus at dam. Because the intention there would be if it's head of reservoir, you're moving fry downstream into the lower drainage. And we just don't know what. What will we get from that? Would we see enough adults come back from that?
Right.
And so that would be a big investment to move out without understanding.
What I would say is that we do know there is life history diversity right now, and the situation at Lookout Point isn't necessarily a research need. Rather, it's a conversation that needs to be had, you know, in that how do we best preserve life history diversity and implement downstream passage there.
I don't get, why do you say it's not a research need? It's a conversation, is what it said.
It's a design thing. I mean, if you have a head of reservoir collector, then perhaps you are implement that by, this is, I mean, I'm just talking freely.
That's
and
fine.
I mean, what I'm thinking is like, you don't move. It's like
it's right here, Griff.
You don't move everything downstream. If that is a concern, then perhaps you do put some fry into the reservoir below the collector
and let them go out. Maybe there's a secondary collection method. Maybe the idea is to that we have to address the reservoir survival in a different way and still have passage at the dam.
Right. But so, that's why, I mean, that's why it makes sense to me that you would study it a little bit before you decided, are we going to do the head of reservoir collector? Yeah.
Don't disagree. This is a different question, though. This is a contribution of different life histories, not the
maintenance
the survival, of different life histories or different sized fish.
I don't 100% agree with you because you need to know if at lookout, if reservoir life history is viable. Right? If you're not going to do head of reservoir collection. The same could be said for passing the fry. Is that going to be a viable strategy?
But you're talking about in reservoir survival, right?
It's a combination, right? Because, you know, you might have lower fry survival to, you know, a migrant size, but if your migrants are more successful, you know, it all comes back to what's the adult abundance. You know, if you're you know, bypassing one bottleneck and putting them into a worse bottleneck, then you're not really getting yourself anywhere, right? So, I mean, our best information right now from the paired release study is showing what?
That you take about a 70% or 80% hit on the smallest juveniles going out. But the greatest fraction of adults that return are from the head of reservoir releases, which implies to me that the larger fish that do make it out are surviving at a higher rate than the smaller fish.
The ones that don't go into the reservoir?
No. The ones that go to the reservoir are surviving at a higher rate than adult, at least preliminarily, because we don't even have a full cohort back yet. We will next year. But having said that, we got to figure out how that trade-off looks for matches up with the fact that we're losing about an 80% clip.
So if you were to reduce that, if you were to reduce that 80% hit down to
by keeping the fish in the reservoir, basically
30-40%. That's your biggest bang for the buck. That's what that's doing.
Yeah.
So that's why that kind of information is important.
So we don't have the full cohort returning. I mean, it's possible those reservoir fish are returning sooner because they grew larger. And so we're, you know, until we have the full cohort.
If you expand the adult returns based off of what we know about the out-migrants, it's a significant difference in adult returns. You're getting way more adults from the juveniles that are able to get out of the reservoir than you are the fish released below the dam, right? So if you have 10 reservoir fish and 10 tailrace fish at Willamette Falls, you're going to get way more of those reservoir fish back than the tailrace.
But you don't. You have 10 reservoir fish and three
exactly.
reservoir fish
exactly.
and 10 tailrace fish. So it's still
exactly. So you want to address the limiting factors that are affecting those reservoir fish and not bypass the reservoir. That's what it's telling.
Yeah. And that could be, and that's, you know, the answer's not completely in yet, but that's why, you know, we're not ready to build a head of reservoir collector yet. Because,
correct.
You know, it might be better to leave a fish in the reservoir, have good passage out of there, improve total survival.
And we don't understand where the hit is. It's somewhere between the head of reservoir and the tail race of Dexter. It could be Dexter Pool, it could be the dam itself, lookout. The lookout index, or probably a combination.
It's all of it.
I would think the question would be pretty important on the list because if you build a collector, and everyone wants to build a collector, if it's a collector, that will pass all life stages, well, it's not going to pass them all at the same rate. We always think that, but that's really not how it works.
No, we saw that in the
corner. So you might have one that does okay on fry but really good on yearlings, and you think you're doing pretty good. Well, maybe you could spend an extra $150 million and make one that works a little bit better, but you kind of want to know what the advantage was in passing more small fish or passing more yearlings. I mean, it just seems like you'd need to have those boxes checked so you could design the right kind of collector.
So are we happy with the question as addressed, or do we need to add a question
well,
or modify the question? Because part of the goal was you know, aren't one of the critical questions. And I know these are, important issues for particular species at particular places. I don't want to, you know, hinder discussion, but ultimately, my goal is to get you down
to the
critical questions.
Me too.
Or at least one.
I gave you one. So
I have one more life history question. I'm sorry to the bogus down. This is kind of a weird one, but as I understand it, there are some residualized Chinook that stay in the reservoir and grow to adulthood. And I'm just curious, are there ocean type, I know I'm making that phrase up, but are there fish that go to the ocean, come back, and then are they able to spawn with these within reservoir fish to create juveniles that could?
They're the same species.
Yeah, I mean, so just to what degree then is that bad because you're not passing fish, or is it good, or somewhere between? I just think that has to be part of what we think about. I mean, I think given, and I know this may sound a little bit weird, but given the desire for life history diversity, maybe it's not so bad to have some of the genome staying up there and not going out to the ocean if it's available to reproduce with other fish to put more eggs in one basket. I just want to throw that out there. And I know that probably doesn't impact what you want to do.
It's going to be a really low level. Super low level. Yeah. And there's not going to be a darn thing we can probably do about it.
Okay.
I don't know what else.
Well, but if you had good passage, you'd probably have reduced.
Sorry.
Well, that's right. So I'm concluding. We like that question in all the very vague degrees of form and style. Is that it?
Well, I guess, the only thing that bothers me is, I think Mike got at it, was there's that question, and then there's more specific kinds of questions that are up above that actually can help answer it without making it the way, you know, be some huge
research study.
Right. You don't, I mean, you really, it almost seems like we need to kind of break it down into the different kind of components.
Know what those are?
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is what you don't need to study is, you know, exactly what percent of the survival you get on fry versus subyearlings versus yearlings back to adulthood. I don't know that that's necessary.
But what is necessary?
But what's necessary is specific places like Lookout Point. Do you get better survival if you do the head of reservoir collection of fry and put them downstream, or better survival of the fish that go through the reservoir? That kind of question.
And I can agree with that. I think, you know, we do want to know that in order to define how this is designed. But in the end, that design should still, you know, be able to pass all life history.
Well, then let's dump that reservoir collection. Make sure we don't have huge mortality in the reservoir.
As a matter of you guys, you know, you said you weren't going to survey us for our opinions on this.
Hopefully.
I think it would help me a lot in understanding where people are if we're going to, like, rank these things, if we could talk about things that were first tier to some language that you absolutely need before you put a facility on the ground versus second tier versus maybe even third tier by project. Because I feel like some people are really locked into thinking about a particular category for a particular dam, and so we end up spending a lot on that, where like it may not be an issue at all on the other dams. And if we're really trying to put together a plan to get to implementation and get fish passage on the ground as quickly as possible, I think that would be critical.
I'm certainly not addressing the sequencing of the questions. We may want to do that this afternoon. I think someone else mentioned earlier this morning that not all questions are equally important at the same point in time in the process, and certainly these are a mixture, and I guess that might help address your issue in terms of what are the important questions and when you do.
It's an issue of this whole group. I mean, it is what we argue about a lot.
Yeah.
It's like what needs to be done before we do something versus what can we do through adaptive management.
I'm not arguing with that, but I'm trying to. So, is there any reason to expect that change the sequence would eliminate any of these questions?
I think so.
Well, I purposely didn't highlight that aspect, the sequencing, because it becomes more of a policy management issue. And I was setting us up to talk about each of these projects independently, what do we need, and thinking of it that way. To avoid the prioritization, you know, we could spend all day on that alone. The other part, though, is the tiering of the importance of each of these pieces of information. And I think the survey is set up very simply, so we're trying to identify the critical and not ask you to really parse out, well, this is A number one, this is second, third. Is it critical in your mind to move, in order to move through design, what do we need? Well, the other things, the secondary stuff, we'll still have those discussions. It's just trying to highlight what really is necessary.
Is the finish line defined? So what's needed? Because it seems like some of these you need even prior to starting the facility design. And other of these questions you need to actually do the design of the facility itself.
Yeah, we've had those conversations with the RM&E team where we kind of said, do we have all we really need at Cougar?
Yes.
Yeah. What else do we need? And, you know, some of what we find out is that different parties have different levels of risk that they can tolerate. And so we have to do additional studies to address other people's risk intolerance.
So, I mean, for the survey, you just have a common finish line, right? Because it sounds like some of what you're saying is, well, you don't need that to start the design, or maybe you're even saying get through design. But, like, for me, being on these design teams, when you're trying to decide, do you need separator bars for fry or not? That's a question that needs to be answered before we complete the design. I mean, that's something you can add at 60%. You know, ideally you'd know it beforehand, but.
It's also something you could add on the flexibility to put them in or out after you build it.
Yeah.
Because.
Just put them in, transport them and separate it. You know what all this.
I mean, it's
hanging up.
I think of that as less of a research question and more of consultation with NIMS. You know, do we have to pass or allow for the passage of all life history types? I don't know. I mean,
well, that's good, but I think that the answer from the Corps is going to be no. We need to base this on the best research, not on what NIMS tells us to do. So. So that's what we're trying to do, is get the best research to inform the decision. And, you know, I mean,
But it's a philosophical question. Seriously. I mean, do you preserve life history diversity or not? There's already tons of literature out there that tells you, you know, the advantages of having more numbers versus the advantages of having broader life history diversity.
You're right, except, you know, the Corps makes a point that some dams, the operators are told to put the fry back in the reservoir. And why are we saying, no, we want you to pass them?
But going off what Mike said, that's a management action later, because those fish have to be moved somehow.
Yeah.
So they're separating them because they're basically storing them on site, you know, and they would be eaten if they weren't separated. So I feel like we get ourselves hung up a lot.
Well, maybe we need to add a question about the effects of local transport.
What?
To those lists. But let's finish this list if we could.
We're
almost to the bottom.
We're not going
to. Almost separate. As contentious, I suspect, is going to be an issue of delayed mortality following passage. Is that something we need to know to be able to implement some of these actions?
That's something we'd want to know about whatever the structure that's built.
I absolutely find this relevant in certain situations, like, for example, do you do a direct release at Detroit, or do you trap and haul, or is it a long bypass that goes down below somewhere else? That's really relevant there. The reach below Detroit is terrible.
Go by project.
Right. So it is important sometimes.
Can we talk it through this project?
So look out.
And we'll also, the survey will give you an opportunity to identify what projects you think that is important, that will be taken in a little while. But it does sound like, for some cases and sometimes seems to be important.
Well, I think delayed mortality in terms of survival through a structure, too, is important. I mean, that's overall how this is usually measured. Now, there's the usual on the SPSS, and there's the usual everywhere else. But, so it's, you know, it's always measured at different projects other than, you know, whether you're just looking straight at damage.
So do we need to answer it before? I mean, do we need to answer delayed mortality for current operations and passage options, or do we need to answer it for the alternative that's selected?
Yes, if you're planning to use an operation as your solution for fish passage. Like if you're going to be spilling at Foster as your long-term, you know, thing, then, yeah, seems like we need to know. Not just the initial passage efficiency and survival over that fish weir, but what the long term effects are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so look out.
If an operation.
Yeah, if you're operationally passing fish, or even if you're just passing them right below lookout, wouldn't you want to measure the effects of the next structure and what those combined effects mean?
Okay. Yep.
So, you know, it's at Chinook or Cougar or Chinook. That's the high head bypass thing, and I think it's relevant there too. You might have immediately one survival, but because they've been direct released, I think, you know, so it's.
But you don't need to know it until after you built the facility. Right.
It's a choice in what you do with building the facility. It doesn't have to be a long run out test at Cougar. Should we do high head bypass type release or trap and haul? You know, and if there's some other effect.
I think. For the core, the conceptual solution there is a trap and haul. And that's how we would look at this right now. So a delayed mortality test, we wouldn't be expecting to do.
So that's
important. Foster, like you mentioned, could be still there, or Stephanie, you mentioned that. So yeah, that could be important if we, when we could conclude, yeah, we need to look at doing still as our solution.
So conveyance hasn't been designed at all at Cougar, just to be clear to everyone in the room.
I said conceptual, yeah.
It has not been determined at all.
That's why I threw that out there, because I felt like that was the special stuff.
It, like you guys are saying, it all depends on the ultimate solution here, and burning that as you might. It's an after test. Unless you want to say, okay, we need to know this before we make that decision, like an operation, but I don't know where we would.
So to be clear, Cougar, we don't need to know what under existing conditions. But right. What we need to know is the difference. High head bypass results are going to give us some information. Future high head bypass studies are going to give us information.
So maybe the only place, when we think of it this way, for me, it comes up is, do we need to measure the Fall Creek where we are doing an operation?
What do you want to know of delayed mortality in a trap and haul as well, if you're going to be trapping and hauling fish for many miles?
Good point.
Delayed mortality associated with that. Mm-hmm.
But that's post-construction, too. That's not
okay. I don't know. We've been talking a lot about examples from other facilities, and where they're doing trap and haul with surface collection, survival is very high. It's 98%, 99%.
To release.
Yeah. It seems like you want to know, you know, when you're making the decision whether to do trap and haul or some kind of volitional bypass, what the likely difference in delayed mortality is. But it seems like you're never going to have the actual numbers until you build the structure, so you're going to have to rely on other studies, literature values, whatever, to inform that initial discussion.
And even then, I mean, a lot of people in the FCRPS land are trying to back into that question, but it's a devilishly tricky question to get at. I mean, you're really reduced to comparing the survival as far downstream or to adult returns as you can through multiple passage routes, and trying to make some sense of everything going all over the place all the time. So that's a hard thing. I agree with you. I think if you have reason to believe that, you know, putting fish over the spillway is going to result in maybe having high, you know, near field survival, but 50% of them got so descaled or something that they're all dying before they eat the Willamette Falls, right, then yes, it's an important design criteria going into your thinking. But if you think it's 2 or 3 or 4%, I wouldn't waste my brain power on it, in my advice.
I think it's also an issue of sequential here. You know, if you look at acute and near field and then the chronic mortality after the facility has been implemented. All right, well, we'll keep that in. So, but the last two categories, cohort replacement rate and effective population size, a little bit more demographic in nature. Are those critical uncertainties that need to be known in order to either operate a particular system or determine the success of a mitigation?
Determine the solution that we want to implement. Mm-hmm.
You think they have to be known before you make a decision? I guess.
That's the question.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That seems like a way to evaluate success
after.
Yeah. Well, I don't necessarily disagree that it's not. I think it could be valuable information to have beforehand, but it's not necessary to have to implement a fish passage solution. It just recognize that you may want a baseline for this, so you can evaluate how effective downstream fish passage was and implement it. But if it's not there, I mean, that doesn't necessarily define the success or failure of downstream fish passage. There's other ways to evaluate that.
So in terms of near field and intermediate goals, it's probably not as critical, but in terms of overall health of the system, down the pike it might be, is that what I'm hearing?
I think so. In terms of implementation, it's not critical, or design and implementation. I don't know, people disagree with me.
I agree with Mike, with the exception of the lookout wildcard, there, the head of reservoir question, right? So.
The only bad place I can think you could fit into is if, in looking at all your other numbers, trying to glue together, at least conceptually, if you have this many of this life history and they're surviving at this rate, coming back, if you can't get to replacement, then maybe that would be a reason why you need to think more about those structures.
It seems
like you can't glue it all together and get replacement at least under, you know, a fairly wide range of ocean conditions, then that's probably a signal that it isn't going to work. In fact, I think the goal is to try to, you know, get populations that can replace themselves, right?
It seems like this is a good measure to track over time, but if I were the Corps, I would want my success to be monitored on project survival, not
cohort
replacement rate, mm-hmm. because there are so many other factors out there that could be impacting those populations that are outside the Corps' control. But I think that this is a telling metric to have over time, and obviously how the population is doing, especially after reintroduction.
You can't have recovery without all of these, but you don't need to know these through the process of trying to achieve recovery, mm-hmm. it seems to me.
Or designing a solution.
Exactly.
But, I mean, we have done a lot of modeling, and although we don't know exactly what kind of dam passage efficiency we're going to get with different types of facilities, I think it showed that we could get to replacement with those kinds of structures and beyond replacement. So, I mean,
okay, so
you're never going to know until you build it.
I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe even more directly of empirical data, to call it that, from genetic pedigree analysis,
yeah.
showing replacement for...
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to say you don't have sufficient information for what you're doing, because I frankly don't know. I was just trying to think of worst case. Where could it take you?
Yeah, look, I agree. That could be a place where this is good to know up front and understand it to the extent you can to help make a decision on at the Amarillo Reservoir.
So do we want to keep them on in terms of near field kind of concerns, or should we pull off?
I think they answer broader questions that are important in the system that aren't necessarily specific to downstream passage.
So that's a no? We don't need them? I'm sorry.
Not for now. What's
not for downstream passage issues, yes.
I think it was important at
recovery level
to make the case for downstream passage. I mean, it's hard to argue with the genetic results there that, you know, we absolutely are not going to make it without addressing downstream passage.
So I think
it was very useful there, but that was more, had less to do with technical design than kind of management policy.
So it sounds to me for purpose of downstream passage in the near term, 10 years of research, perhaps we don't need these, but you can't forget them in the long term.
I think it'll be very useful in the long term, yeah, for post-construction monitoring.
Sure.
But it's also playing a role in decisions about adult passage right now.
So then I have one more question, which is the other flip side of the coin. Are there any critical questions, critical uncertainties that I would have that are not listed here that we absolutely need to know?
In other words,
we want to make sure we have the ones we need. We may have found a couple that we don't necessarily need right away, but are there some lurking out there that we've forgotten?
I have some questions about the running capacity of these reservoirs, and maybe that's tucked into and kind of inherent to the reservoir survival piece. But
I'm sorry, I have some hard hearing. What you said again?
I have some questions about the reservoir and their rearing capacities.
Yeah, the carrying capacity.
And maybe that can be tucked or is tucked into the survival piece of this. But if they can only rear X number of fish, it's going to put a real ceiling on what we're realistically going
to. Is that, I'm not trying to argue, but is that someone who fall in with these last two? In other words, you now have good passage. Now the question is, well, how much you can, what is the carrying capacity of the system that you created?
Well, he said specifically reservoir.
Reservoir, yeah.
I was talking specifically about the reservoir environment, which we're counting on to.
So that blends into reservoir survival one a little bit.
It does,
yeah. And that's why during that I was thinking, well, maybe it can just be tucked or is tucked inherently underneath the reservoir survival piece, mm-hmm. but.
Well, the survey form does have a few lines if you want to have things that you think are
cool. I don't want to take I would like to symbolically just remove some of these, but we're not. last thing I would do is add one.
They will be.
But I just feel like I should say something.
Mark them as important.
Well, I heard the last two lines of this one we could drop for near term purposes of downstream passage research.
Okay.
But yes. Never forget them with regard to ultimate recovery goals.
Right.
I think there's a whole bunch of unknowns at this point that you really need to have more fleshed out alternatives to identify. And what comes to mind for me is, as an example, would be the effects of your alternative on things like adult passage, you know, at Foster. So we're going to spill all this water over here. How's that going to affect your the efficacy of your adult facility in collecting fish? And so, but those are kind of further down, a little bit further down than this workshop here today. But I think it's things we can't lose track of. You know, is as we start developing these alternatives, is making sure we check in and see, you know, if we're doing some sort of change to operations at Detroit where we're going away from peaking, is that going to drastically affect downstream temperatures?
So basically the way I look at it, sort of synergistic effects that may be unexpected. It benefits the smolt, but then you have maybe a detrimental effect on adult passage.
Exactly.
You sometimes have issues like that in the Columbia. You know, the
exactly. And I think it's important to acknowledge, especially Foster and Fall Creek, are relatively fragile populations when it comes to limiting factors on adults. We see very small effective population sizes when you look at the genetics. So, you know, you have to be very conscious of how you're going to affect PSM and adult passage.
Are there particular things we'd want to do in the near future, near term, to address these issues, or are these all against our post-construction evaluations?
You need to examine them throughout the design process because you don't want to invest the money, especially where you're talking about these large structures in these alternatives, and find out you have some, you know, irreconcilable impact elsewhere in the system that, that is really going to screw you up.
I don't disagree, but what is that process?
I think it's just part of the design
process. What's the
effort?
You know, in terms of, okay, we're going to have to let a contract to make sure that this issue doesn't exist or help that issue. What is that process that you...
It's giving the PDT the time and the room and the resources to explore those issues.
Oh. And that's being argumentative.
Less of a critical uncertainty that there are many of those, right?
For today, yeah. Well, you brought
up... It's more of, okay... We are going to put this structure in, and it's using, you know, existing pathway, you know, to move water through. So, really, it shouldn't. It has a low likelihood of impacting, you know, the adult fish collection facility. But this facility, we're going to build. It's going to have an independent water outlet, and we don't want to put this right here or something.
You know, in a perfect world, you know, while Fenton's playing musical turbines at Foster, we would be not only monitoring downstream passage, but the adults in the tail race, and we're doing that to the fun.
So that is an RME question. Mm-hmm. There's one example. I was trying to think where the other projects.
But are we going to come up with a complete list here today? No, I think you know, we're sitting off more than we can chew already.
Well, we're developing ideas, you know, we're thinking about it, we're developing ideas. We probably wouldn't get to them all today, but that's the whole idea of this workshop, is to start the conversation with the larger group.
And that's where the PDT is going to need to be interacting, I think, to a greater degree with the RM&E team on sort of fleshing out those issues.
I like the idea of maybe adding that operational synergistic effects here, because mm-hmm. Foster is an active one that we are researching effects of spill on adults. You could think of lookout operations affecting temperature mm-hmm. or other aspects. Detroit power peaking issues could become real when you put a surface collector out there. I don't know about Cougar or Fall Creek, but...
Isn't it already on here, though? Mm-hmm. Effects of operations on passage success.
I think of it as adult, but then there may be other things that are important, flow and temperature management. Water scheme.
Okay, just add synergistic.
Not important. Sorry.
So it sounds like a good idea to add one
water
on negative synergistic effects.
No, we could just add it to this.
Multiple actions
here, don't you think?
Just to make sure it's identified and part of the consciousness.
This one here, instead of downstream.
We had upstream and downstream. Passive efficiency by route. And Jim mentioned downstream habitat quality. I don't know if that one is... We have to consider what project and whether that's critical for design or not. It could be for lookout for a head reservoir collector in particular.
One clarification question: when we were talking about, you know, the cohort replacement rate, effective population size, is not really critical for near-term decisions. I assume that people are thinking that some of the other categories up above might entail small to adult, juvenile to adult methods, right? I mean, we're not. That some of these other questions you can evaluate them either with juvenile fish or, you know, wait for adult returns. So, is that correct? Do people?
So, are you saying it would be a metric you'd get sort of as an ancillary?
Yeah,
to
you get it.
Your
you
other
get
studies.
It. I mean, like the genetic pedigree, that you could be getting that, but that's not, you know, you also could be using that kind of study or some of the paired release studies for evaluating juvenile passage questions directly.
If I follow that, then when we want to consider a method to get at reservoir survival, if genetic pedigree is useful for that, that could be on the table.
Yeah,
I would think.
Okay.
That's a good way of thinking.
Because we're talking, this first column is not the method so much as
Well, and also removing it from this list, I mean, to me, this list is what's needed to design the downstream passage structures, not what's important to be monitoring. I mean, there are other things outside of downstream passage design that we want to continue to do.
Certainly monitoring adult returns and between facets would be part of the action. It wouldn't necessarily be near term to the downstream passage design, but certainly has the consequences. All right, so we could discuss for a little bit the green versus white, and this is what Army Corps viewed as areas, green is viewed as areas that are pretty well adequately so far covered. Whites are areas within this matrix that are, have not been adequately investigated. That's one group's perspective. What we were thinking of doing is basically handing out a questionnaire now that mimics these categories, and then we're going to ask each of you to sort of prioritize for each of these categories that you cite critical or uncritical questions, so that we have sort of a broader consensus of what people think are important. We plan to do this in sort of real time. We'll pass out the questionnaire. You can show it. Do you have a product version of that?
I think I do.
This is just for fun, right?
This is the fun part. This is the group activity part.
It's not like an influence who wants.
We should have done this before.
$100 million facility.
Yeah. Rides on this. Right in this room right now.
Yeah, or nay.
Yeah. We're going to build this tomorrow.
Yeah, that's true. That was really good.
What, when, and where?
That's more interesting than that.
Oh, yeah, that got boring quick. The debacle in the desert.
Just one fun one. Here we go. Pass that around. So what you see here on the screen is the survey form that we're passing out to you. The information categories are basically the information categories we discussed, most of which we decided, except for the last two, seem to be critical needs. The various columns are the various projects in the system. What we'd like you to do for each one of those cells is to indicate by one if you think that area of information for that particular dam is critical to know, then one down if you think it's not critical, two, and a question mark if you don't care, you have no opinion, or you're uninformed. And I'm assuming also, in terms of doing this, if you think the information is already known, it shouldn't be critical anymore. Is that right, from your perspective?
I don't know if you want to participate or not.
So if you already think, for example, reservoir entry timing at Detroit is well known, don't put it down as a critical thing we need to do, because it's already been done. You see what I'm saying? On the other hand, if it hasn't been done and you think it's important to do, put it down as a critical issue. So if we're talking in terms of future. So put down one if you think it's critical at a particular location, two if it's not, and a question mark if you have no opinion or don't want to express an opinion. And what we're going to do is we'll collect these from everyone, and then we'll have a little army of talliers to coalesce this information, and then after lunch, we'll present the results with the idea of trying to see how well the group results match our individual perspectives and whether or not there's surprises, high or low.
John, I got a question about the question mark. If you think if you don't care, that means it's not critical in your own mind. So the question mark should be, you don't
what
know.
What we want to do is a person knew nothing about Foster Dam, we wouldn't want you to put a one or two just because you had two options. Basically, if you don't, well, you don't care about Foster, you don't know about Foster.
No, I think the difference is if you don't care about Foster, or you don't think there is an information need there, you put a two. It's not critical.
But if you don't know anything about what studies have been done there, you better put a question.
Right, yeah. We don't want an uninformed person to just put an answer down because they only had two options.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you want us to do these by
organization, or is this an individual?
You.
It's an individual.
Individual. Individual.
Okay, but the other thing is, we're not trying to recreate what the Army team does for annual prioritization.
Right here, right now.
Is that what we're doing?
We're trying to get to a discussion this afternoon that, you know, what is the group's consensus right now as to what are the critical information needs so we can talk about study designs on this.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's, it seems like that's a different kind of question. I mean, I thought we were really going to look at, what kinds of studies do we need help figuring out how to design?
So we're planning this afternoon is that for those questions, those issues that are critical, we'll focus on those. Because there's no reason to look at a third-rate priority question and worry about its design right now. Figure out which ones the group thinks are high priorities, and then ask the questions, are we doing okay, or do we need to do something different, and how? What are the options?
Okay, so if we know how, if we have something that we think is still a critical question, but we think we know how to study it, we can still give it a one.
Absolutely, and basically when we get to this afternoon, it's going to be a quick discussion.
Right, and I didn't discriminate between Chinook and Steelhead, so if it's critical for one or the other, indicate, and we'll discuss what the species is when we get the tally up, if there's a need identified.
One more question. When you say information needs to support design and implementation of Town Stream Passage, is implementation construction or?
Yeah, construction. Two construction.
Two construction.
You're going to abstain?
But are these things that, if we already have enough information, we should give it a two?
Isn't that the last
one more time.
If we already think there's enough information about something, give it a two.
If we already think that we've done it and we have enough information, it's no longer critical.
Okay.
Black River Room.
Or if you don't think it's critical for design, right?
Then you tolerate it as well. Either it's not important, or you think we've had enough information that we don't have to do another study. Because we're basically wanting to know what are the critical studies that we want to do or need to do into the future.
Is this for Chinook or Steelhead?
Yes.
But if it's a one for Steelhead and a two for Chinook.
Just put the one in there and then we'll talk about it.
I heard that one.
Essentially, you know, just to say that, that's what that demo part
it seems like having a diversity is useful.
Seems to go hand in hand.
So we're not all to the you would do that, yeah. We're trying to create the new big news, the 21st century fashion.
I think this was for you, seeking out all the names. Well, seeking out all the names. Well, eventually we'll give it to him. Did you get all the names? Oh, some of the people. I'll pass it around.
It's down here. That's just right.
So if I'm a little bit warming, I'm heading a little bit. Because I have some flexibility. What's the building energy?
205, 84, etc.
I'm
going to the Grand.
Oh, so you need to get to the 84.
I'm just trying to get there.
84 is like Yeah, 84 is just right over here.
99 East would go. It's only like it's right by the building.
Yeah.
That seems
yeah, I don't know, but if you came out of this building, 84 is south of here, but it's like 2 blocks over. It's like, so maybe you just have to go around the block. You going to look around tonight?
Yeah.
What's going on in the Grand?
Oh, I'm going to go fish the Grand Line.
Oh.
Nice. Nothing work.
Yeah.
Lifetime, you can see adaptation.
Yeah.
The scary part is they're adapting to our change of their world.
There you go.
So right here.
So.
84 is right here. If you go back to
that's what I was thinking. That you just come right.
Look at your pet dog. It doesn't exist 30 years ago. That breed.
Maybe it's up a ways.
So this is 12 right here. It's 12 to Irving.
Okay. I've never fished it.
Would you float it? Float it on there? Wrap it? Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, let me take this to get those guys to sign in.
I can guarantee you not one of these sheets is the same.
Well, yours is right, but the rest of ours are different.
I have a lot of two different friends.
So we need to, for a while.